seven, eight, nine, 10, 11, 12,
yeah,
13, 14.
This is a story of how Emmanuel Chavez got into this horrible mess and what he did trying to get out of it.
Yeah. Well, it was around 1960, early part of 62, I think, when I came into Delano to visit Richard and Caesar. I was at that time working in San Diego. And, well, I was making good money. Well, I mean good money, around 12 to... Well, my guarantee was $900 a month as a salesman. Whether I make the $900 or not, I was guaranteed $900. In fact, $940 a month.
Well, as a Ford salesman?
No, I was working with Guarantee Chevrolet in San Diego.
Oh.
And my guarantee was about $940 a month. And the way they get the guarantee there, you work for 3 months on commission, and then they judge you on accordingly what they think, what kind of sales you want.
Mm-hmm.
And I was making way over that. That $940. I was making $1,200 to $1,500. It depends. And I came down here, and I came to visit Richard and Caesar. And a long time I hadn't seen him, and I start fooling around, drinking, and then I spend my money. And then I was supposed to go back to work. So then at that time, Caesar said, Richard was working, and Caesar was organizing. At this time, I thought he wasn't doing nothing. So.
Well, what did you think he was doing?
Oh, I thought fooling around, because I asked him who was paying him. He said nobody. And at that time, he was trying to organize his farm workers. And I asked him, well, it must be some kind of a racket, You must have some kind of a racket or something. What is it? He says, well, you want to see it? I said, sure. He says, well, go with me. You've got nothing to do. I'm by myself. So I started taking along with him in the car, But I think the first time we went to has Hanford to go see Gilmer. And I was just going for the ride. And I was, he wouldn't tell me. He'd just tell me he was going to organize the farm workers, and that if I remembered when we were working in the field, how they used to treat us. Which is right, we used to have a lot of hassles with the contractors and big, demand your brothers in San Jose one time owed us some money, and he never paid us. We worked with Almaden in 1940. We have hassle with contractors, for instance, in the bonus, keeping the bonus and taking us from one place to another, lying to us, saying, well, look, we're going to pay good down there. You go down there, and here's $10 that you can move, or $25 if you haven't got money. Then when you get there, then it isn't like he said, it was by piecework. So we owed him $25 and we had to stay. So we never forgot this. And then I started remembering, going back my memory, of all this. He says, and then really what got me more interested was, he says, remember the police department, how they used to treat you, the police? I said, well, hell yes, I do. I'd like to get in with them, And then, this is a good chance. I said, well, what's this got to do with the police? He said, well, we organize, and then you get groups, and then you start fighting the things that you think it isn't right. I said, well, perfect, but who's going to pay you? Who's going to pay me if I would have to? He said, nobody. I said, well, go to hell. I'm not going to work for nothing. He said, I'm not going to leave a $940 a month job just to come and work for nothing. I said, hell, let the police go. That's it, so the farm workers get out like I did. Yeah, he said, but that's not the idea. He said, that's why the farm workers don't get organized, because all the farm workers that get out of farm work, they say the same thing. Once they get a good job, they say, let the farm workers get out like I did. So he says, why don't you come and help me to get it going? And then, he says, no, I can't do it. So, well, I said, I'll tell you what I'll do. He says, I can call back to where I work and ask for 30 days extension. And then, if they give me 30 days, I said, if you don't organize the farm office in 30 days, I quit. So, but I didn't know what I was going to say in 30 days. You know, I just, take it one in 30 days. So then, I thought he was kidding me. I thought somebody was paying him. So I told him, I said, no, bullshit. I said, you're getting paid from somebody. I said, you're not doing it for nothing. You know, either getting paid from union or from the government. Or somebody's paying you. I mean, you know. No, he says, no. So then, in going around, I think we took a trip to Stockton. And then we took a trip to...
You probably met Dolores up there.
Dolores, yeah, I met Dolores up there in Stockton the first time I went down there. And then I took a trip to with him to Manteca, I think it was one. And so, finally I started getting lazy, I didn't want to work, you know. So I said, well, I says, I'm going to help you for 30 days and see what happens if it doesn't work. And I'll just go back. So then I called back Pete Northrup, the general manager over there, and told him that I was going to stay here for a while. He said, what's the matter? You get a better job? And I said, no. In fact, I got a job without pay. And he said, you must be kidding. I said, no, I'm not kidding. And so, well, he says, don't you like it over here? What's wrong? I said, you're making money? And, well, they, you know, give me a new car every 3 months. Gas, bonus, everything I need. I said, no, I says, so I told him that I was going to organize for a phone office and all that. So he couldn't understand. So I said, well, so he says, all right, if you want a job later, you can come around, you know.
Yeah.
So then I started, I thought, he said, well, what are we going to do? So he started giving me the rundown, how we would do it. I never organized. I organized before. In Tucson, Arizona, I was one of the first originators for the Mexican Chamber of Commerce over there in Tucson. And then I was involved with the organization of the Saguaro Post, the American Legion. And then I was involved in politics there. In fact, I was, let me see, I was, not actually running the campaign, but I was about second in command and running the campaign against Kottenberger. He's a board of supervisors, and he's been there 16 years or so. They used to call him Papa Kottenberger, everybody. And we put in a Mexican guy in there in space, and well, we had to do a little arm twisting, but we're done. And in Arizona, you know how you roll, how you do it over there. So anyway, that's about all the organizing I've ever done. And, you know, I wasn't really organizing, I was just going on. So then, in 1962, we started circulating some cards, you know, they used to say, you want to be a farm worker. Oh, first he said, we're going to have a co-op, we're going to have a credit union, we're going to have this for the farm worker. And he said, in 6 months, we'll know if the farm workers want a union or not.
You're talking about the death benefit plan?
Oh, yeah. We talk about the death benefit plan. And he says, and within 6 months, if farm workers don't want it, says, we'll just leave it go. So we started circulating cards. I think we circulated about 80,000. I don't know how many. We started getting them back.
What the cards say?
The cards say, if I remember right, they used to say, would you like your own organization, your own association? Would you like to control your own association? Would you like to have better wages? If so, how much? Some guys used to put $5.25 an hour, some $4, some $7 an hour, and some $1.25, and, you know, different things. And then, would you like to have your own newspaper? Yes. English or Spanish? Spanish, since they speak English. And send your name and address. Well, actually, what they were, you know, getting leads.
Yeah.
And two, finding out if they really wanted to know. So when those all them cars start floating in, well, we knew that people were interested. They really wanted.
How did you pass them out?
We used to go and have house meetings and just give them to people and tell them to spend money. We used to have our P.O. box there on the back of the car, if I remember right.
Your own P.O. box here?
Mm-hmm. A P.O. box? No, on the house, I think. We didn't have money to rent a box.
At the beginning?
At the beginning, yeah. I think they were coming direct to the house where he is now, to 1221 Kensington. And they used to mail them in. And so we started working on that, you know, so.
Was almost all of that work done by the house meetings?
Yeah, and by contacts, you know. First, I think the first thing we did when we started is we started with people we knew right away, you know, to get leads. Mm-hmm. And
in the various towns.
Yeah, like Delano.
Yeah.
In Delano. But people, the ones in Delano that knew us from way back, they thought we were crazy, you know, because, well, we knew who we were, you know, and they thought we were crazy. So we were getting better results somewhere else where they didn't know us, you know. And after we got all these cars returned, you know, we knew that there was a lot of enthusiasm. So he said, well, let's start going to the town. And he says, and just setting up a fast committee. Like, for instance, we go into a little town and have one or two house meetings, and they say, okay, now you're in charge of this town. Just anybody, just you're in charge of whoever we saw you was more interested. You start doing this, and we write the plan. And I remember that we had a leaflet. The first leaflet we wrote was, it was made with an old mimeographic machine that they sold it to us, but we never did pay for it. You remember, what's it, Millie from Fresno?
Oh, Mildred.
Mildred?
Serrano?
Yeah. Mildred Serrano sold us an old mimeographic machine, one of those twist things,
yeah.
A.B. Dick,
yeah.
For $25. In fact, when we were on strike, one of our members called me up not long ago and said, man, he says, there's a lady here talking about the union. I said, yeah. So what's she saying? Well, she said that she sold us a mimeograph machine, which she never got paid for. I said, that Miller? She says, yeah, how do you know? I said, it's true. She's not talking about the union. She's saying the truth. I said, go pay her. Tell her $25. So he went back and tried to pay her, and he said, no. You know, she was just using the phrase, you know, how we've gone up since that day.
Yeah.
He says, I donate the $25. But he thought we were talking about the union. Well, anyway, our first leaflet, if I remember, that we used to give in houses would say this, if I can remember right, it was just about one, two, three, or four
paragraphs.
That's all. Made by hand.
Yeah.
No typewriter. And would say, we don't believe in strikes, period. We believe in justice through law and how would you say it? By, you know, in other words, get everything that we was going to fight through the law and through the Congress and through organize to get strong and get laws to protect the farmers. Mm-hmm. And but I remember clearly the first paragraph used to say, we don't believe in strike.
Yeah.
We don't strike.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the other thing is that there's a real, just things, would you like your own credit union? Would you like death benefit for you and your family? Would you like a bank of your own so you can go borrow money without having too much collateral?
That was on that leaflet?
I think so, yeah. I'm just real, but I mean, two letters or three. Just would you like it? Yeah.
And then was there a little place at the bottom with
yeah.
the card that they could cut off?
No, this was initially like that. Just paragraphs that say what we would do. All right, now, and then we'll pass around. We say, okay, we organize this, what we can have.
And where did you pass these around?
In the house meetings.
At the house
meetings. House meetings, yeah. And then we used to go in little towns and sit committees, like in Wasco, Lamont, Chester, Corcoran, Hanford, all over Imperial Valley, all over. So when we had, actually what we wanted is one interested guy in every town. We didn't want a committee, but we used to say that. So when we had about 250 towns with one interested guy in every town, we said, all right, in 1962, if you remember, Fred, you came to that meeting.
Yeah.
Was it 1962 or 63? 62.
Two.
In October. No. In October.
September.
September? Right, September.
September, yeah.
And actually, one representative from every town came, and you remember what happened there. Let me tell you that. Well, you remember what happened there. We arranged that meeting, and there was about, what, 250 people there, maybe?
Yeah.
280, something like that. Representatives from all other towns, and we got pictures and stuff like that. And then we urged them to go back to the towns and start organizing. And there we decided what we wanted, what we were going to do, what we were going to name the organization. And it was voted that it would be National Farm Workers Association. And you remember that we displayed the flag made out of paper, remember?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I made that flag out of paper, meat wrapping paper, because we didn't have no money. And I remember Sal Gonzalez, or Sal and Frank Ortiz gave me, I think it was $2 to buy some watercolor paint. And I made that flag, and then when I spread it, everybody got shook because it was bright.
Tell how you spread it.
Huh?
Tell how you
spread it. Well, we had it rolled up. Nobody knew about it. I think just Caesar and I and Richard Mitchell. I made it in Richard's house. And I guess that's all. Nobody's seen it. And we had it rolled up and then that meat paper, you know, and nobody had seen it, not even mailed it, nobody remembered, we had it rolled up over there.
Yeah.
And then we were talking, then we said we had a banner there that we wanted them to vote, see if they would approve it. And that would be our emblem, you know, our banner. So then when I dropped it, you know, and everybody got shook up, you know, we could hear a pin drop.
Oh, boy.
And in fact, one lady came out of there, Mrs. Hernandez, she's got a little grocery store in Lamont. Shoot out of there and went home and called the police department and told her that she went to a communist meeting. You remember her?
I think she was in the CSO there.
Yeah, she was in the CSO in Lamont. And then I gave a... Then somebody in the crowd asked me, well, what does it represent, you know? And I didn't know what it represents. I just made it, you know. I mean, there was no representation on it. I just... You know, that was, you know, something bright, something to have. So I said that the red was a blob we would shed to get farm workers up, and the white was the liberty, and black was the black knight we passed when we were farm workers. Anyway, it's very interesting. And, in fact, that thing got lost and I haven't found it.
Really?
Yeah.
Souvenir hunter.
Somebody's got it, yeah. We haven't traced it, never. Somebody's got it though, but, you know, I don't know who.
Yeah.
Somebody told me they found it in San Francisco, that it might be. Well, I went and looked for it and it was in the yard, but I don't know where it is. Anyway, I've been looking for it because I wanted it myself. And I couldn't find it. So then after that, I guess you remember they elected me, what was it, organizer for the, or what was it? I forgot. Secretary Treasurer?
Yeah, I think that was.
Yeah, they elected me Secretary Treasurer and Caesar General Director. Mm-hmm. And so then... the meeting was all over, and we came home.
No. Then they elected some marvelous officers for the organization.
Oh, yeah, and then they elected... that's not funny. Yeah, and then they elected a president, because he was about 72 years old, and he was one of them guys that talked loud and hit the table and talk about the independence of Mexico, and everybody got roused up and clapped and clapped, and they made him the president. And that's about all we heard from him. We never could make him move no more. Next day we went to his house, and he wouldn't move anymore.
He was sober then.
Yeah. And there was other officers they elected, I guess, but they never came across nothing. And, well, when that meeting was over, then we came home to your night and said, okay, now what? Said, now we're going to work. Oh, well, I said, fine, what are we going to do? He says, well, you got to pick a town where you want to start and really, really go and organize now. We started working on mostly Caesar was working on the bylaws and the corporation and the what you call them, the
Constitution,
and he was working, well, I was helping him too, and he used to go, and we used to go and organize, and we used to come back and make recess at night till 1, go back the next morning and organize, and come back and work till about 12 at home, leaflets, and work on this plan, and then work on the insurance, and make letters to the insurance company, see how much if we could visit them and try to find a plan for it.
Pardon me just a second before you go on to the next. Do you remember what month it was that you started working with him? See, he started working around April or early May.
61?
No, 62.
Well, it was, I think it was, it was 4th of July, I think is when I came down here.
Oh, yeah.
I'm pretty sure. That's around the 4th of July.
Yeah.
So it was,
well, about 2 months before the, about 2 months before the convention, you were working.
July, August, September.
Yeah.
Yeah, about 3 months before the convention, we started on that. And then I said, he says, pick a town, he says, because that town is the one that's going to be the first organized town. I said, well, I really don't know much about this, I said, but give me the hardest town there is. I said, that way, you know, if I can't make it, well, I have excuses. It's the hardest town, we'll try another. He said, well, Corcoran has just been hit not long ago with a strike, and people are leery. He says, there's two or three ranchers that own the town, Boswell, Siler, and what was the other one? I can't remember the other guy.
O'Neill?
No, three of them, Basil, Siler, and Tyrone used to work with them, you know.
Yeah.
One of our fellows that got killed here, and his father. Anyway, so those three guys own the town, and they don't have to. See, they know you're organizing, and people that are organized, they don't have to. Just don't get my job, and you'll get out of town or whatever. I said, I'll take Corcoran. And I remember, I said, well, you're going to tell me what to do because I don't know how to organize. He said, well, I said, I don't know. The best thing to do is go down there and start talking to people and help them when you can. Now, this is without money, you know.
Was this going into 63 or was it still in 62?
Well, as soon as we came back from that meeting, right away, 62. So then, Then I said, I don't know what I'm going to do. I said, because I don't know how to organize, but anyway, he says, you tell me and I will do it, you know. So he said, well, the main thing is help people all you can, he says, give them service and then make them work for you and organize and start having house meetings and talking to people. And tell them our plan, and tell them our meeting, and tell them what we propose. And by that time, we knew what we wanted. People had asked for insurance benefits. They wanted a bank, and they wanted this, and they wanted those, all those things.
Yeah.
They said, "This is what we're going to work on." Mm-hmm. I said, "Fine." So then he said, "Can you help them out?" I said, "Fine." I said, "No." Are you going to give me money to eat? He says, no. I said, well, how in the hell am I going to go over there and eat? I don't know nobody over there. said, well, you got to, I don't know how you're going to do it. We ain't got no money. I said, well, what am I going to do? I said, I've never done this before. He said, well, just go and just do the best you can. Go work half a day or go pick cotton half one time and get to eat. And he said, but don't start working. He said, forget that you're organizing and then just keep on working. He said, just make enough to eat. You know, if you make a dollar and a half, that's all you need to eat, you know. And he says, pretty soon they'll be giving you something to eat over. So I went to Corcoran, and I remember driving into Corcoran. Never been, you know. So, little town, you know. Started looking around, I didn't know what to do. So, I went into the barber shop, and I saw a Mexican, and I went in there and started talking to him. His name was Mike Navarro.
Yeah, he was a CSO.
Yeah, CSO guy, and then I started talking to him, and he said, you want to get a haircut? I said, no, I didn't have no money with me, you know. I said, I wanted to talk to you. He says, about what? I said, well, I got, you got time. He says, I'd like to talk to you about an organization. Oh, he says, I think I heard a little bit about it, but well, he says, I haven't got much time right now. He says, but why don't you come back about 5:30, I get out of here, and we'll talk. I said, fine. So I took off, and then just went around in circles all day after that. I was in the morning when I got there, I remember. It was about 9 o'clock. And I don't know what else to do, you know. Couldn't find no other Mexican, everybody was working on it. So I started going along in circles.
You didn't know Julio?
No, I didn't know Julio. So I started getting disappointed, and I said, shit, what the hell am I going to do here? You know, without money, I didn't have no money to eat. I think Alan made me a lunch, and I took it with me. I didn't have a penny with me. And so 5:30 came, and I said, I hope this guy takes me to his house to eat or something. So I went, started talking to Mike, and well, you know, first he wasn't a farm worker to begin with, he was a barber. And he said, well, I don't think you're going to do any good here, because a few years back here, a union came in here, and so they left all the guys stranded here, and came and striked, and they took off, and now these guys got blackballed, and there's some guys that can't even get a job anymore. Yeah, but I said, this is not a union, this is an association, you know. This is an organization. We don't believe in strikes, we never would strike. So then, then I couldn't convince him, so I said, well, I'll make him a friend anyway, the hell with it. So I didn't talk to him about the organization no more. I started talking to him about, you know, what is it doing around here, what are you working, what are you doing? I invited him to go get a beer, pretty sure. Well, I told him, I haven't got no money. He looked at me, he said, does he get paid? I said, no, we don't get paid, you know, we're over here. No money. So he said, okay, I'll buy you a beer. So we went and bought a beer. It was in that little bar there. And so I didn't talk about the organization no more. I just started talking. I wanted to make friends with him. So then, he said, well, are you going to be around here? Are you going to come back tomorrow? Well, no. I said, I'm going to stay here. Oh, he says, where are you staying? So I said, well, I don't know yet, you know, because I didn't have no money. I was going to stay in the station, so I was going to stay. So he said, well, I'll see you around. So he took off. So then I started running around. And then I met some other fellows there. I forgot his name, this old man. The reason I met this guy, because he just got hurt in the job, and his lady, he was in crutches. What the hell was his name? I forgot his name. I picture him. So I started talking to him, and started telling him about what, you know. He says, yeah, he says, look at me. He says, I got hurt in the job, and I only get, I don't know how many dollars a week. He says, I'm really hurting. I said, well, this is exactly what we want to do. We'll make an organization to help people. He said, well, good. He says, I'm trying to help you all I can. He says, but once you get this organization going, come around. He says, I'll join. So, bad news, you know. So then the next day,
So you slept in your basement?
I was sleeping in the station. I used to go down. What I used to do is at night when it get dark, I used to go down and find myself, one of those dirt roads in the cotton field, and just go in there, far and just go to sleep there. And next morning I wake up and go try and talk to people as much as I could. But I didn't have I wasn't present enough, you know. Like, for instance, if I knew what I know now, I was the first guy I've gotten, I would have stuck with him, you know. If this guy was hurt, I would have at least asked him where he lived. I didn't even know where this guy lived. That was the mistakes I was making, you know, because I didn't know.
Yeah.
I didn't, you know, if I would have could come back to him or accidentally, you know, hit him, like we do now in organizing, but I didn't even ask them where you live. In fact, I even forgot their names. I didn't even write it down. So that was the thing wrong. I was talking to people, but I didn't know where they lived, or I couldn't come back to them and hit them the second time because I didn't know where to get them. So finally, I hit them to Julio Hernandez. He was a foreman, I think. Sort of a crew pusher for a contractor. Mm-hmm. And Julio Hernandez was, you know.
Was he at that September thing, Julio?
Yeah, I think he was.
Yeah.
Well, no, wait a minute. No, he wasn't.
Wasn't?
No. Oh,
because that barber was there.
The barber was there, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, Julio was there. Julio was there, yeah, that's right. So then I knew Julio. I went to the barber because that's right. And then I went to Julio, but they were working, but they weren't paying much attention. You know, that was really, they had CSO in their mind.
Yeah.
So
a little bit. Not much.
Yeah. Well, you know. Anyway, they were moving on that that end. And then I went to Julio, and then Julio said, well, I'm working, you know, and working a lot of hours, so I said, well, we ought to work for a meeting, you know. And what I was working for a big meeting again. And, you know, it was silly, what I remember now. So I wasted about 45 days in Corcoran again, talking to people. And until one time, I used to come back to Delano and Caesar and eat and get another big lunch and take off. Because them guys didn't believe me, I wasn't. So one time Julio was taking a crew to go home and he find the station wagon. He saw the station wagon there and knock at the window. And I said, what are you doing here? Did you get drunk last night? I said, no, I didn't get drunk, I'm sleeping, you know. But he thought I was, you know, that I stayed over there. So he says, are you really staying out here tonight? I said, yeah. You haven't got the money? See, they still didn't believe that we were getting paid. He said, no, we don't get paid. So he says, all right, this is tomorrow's meeting day for CSO at the school. Why don't you go down there and we'll talk, see what we need to do. So I went down there, yeah, and he made a pitch for me, and then by this time, this barber put out a pitch too, you know. So then they decided, they had about $400 in the till or $300.
Was that woman still there with the Meyer Ministry? Sister Stone?
Sister Ann?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I didn't know her at that time. I didn't know her.
Yeah.
I didn't know her until I started using the Meyer Ministry Hall. That, in fact, the Montreal, the one in the Montreal now on the 40 acres.
Oh, yeah?
You know,
that was her?
That was Meyer Ministry. That was in Corcoran.
Oh, that's where I saw that before.
I was in Corcoran, yeah. That's where I used to make my meetings.
So then
at that time they voted that they would give me a rent the hotel there for me, and then they would take me to eat. So boy, from there on, it started, you know. And then I started to, and she said, stop making house meetings. But I was ashamed to ask him to have a house meeting. But then I started making house meetings, and then the first meeting I made, I remembered like it was today. I said, well, you know, we're willing to help anybody. And then lady got up right away and said, why don't you help me? He says, look at my boy, hasn't got no shoes, and they don't want to give me welfare, and he hasn't got no shoes to go to school or clothes. Says, we'll do that, we'll help you. I didn't even know how I was going to help.
Was this the CSO meeting or later?
No, in another meeting, one of our house meetings. And I said, I'll help you. And he said, well, what are you going to do tomorrow? I said, nothing, I'll take you to this. So everybody, you know, kind of liked it because everybody was working, couldn't help her. I said, this lady had been crying for a year or so. The welfare used to use the excuse that she had a lot in Texas, and that made her ineligible for welfare. So that lot in Texas was worth what? Hell, maybe $100, $75. See? But then she wasn't there, and she didn't have no clothes, no money, or nothing. So I went to the welfare, and I think I went and talked to Gilbert by the end, just give me a little bit of knowledge on this welfare thing. And then I told, I think Gilbert by the end told me, well, hell, sell the goddamn lot, give it. She'll get more here, you know. So I went and talked to the lady. She said, no, but I can't because my mother gave it to me. You know, like, I said, ma'am, you're getting shoes, you need money to live on. They can rent you a house. I said, that lot's not worth $75 in Texas. Yeah, man. I said, if you don't get rid of it, they'll hold it against you all the time that you got property. But little did we know, you know, that even you can even have $10,000 worth. But what do you know, I see?
Yeah.
So they were fooling us. And anyway, I went and worked on her, you know. I worked on her and I got her the welfare. And that lady's been there crying for a year and I have nobody could help. Well, I didn't help her because I knew. I just was persistent, and I guess the welfare thought, well, hell, this guy, what are you doing? But I wasn't. Hitting them every day, you know.
Yeah.
So the people start saying, well, they do help. This guy does help. So then, in the next meeting, I remember then Julio introduced me to this Sister Ann, you know, Ann Harrison, and she was with a migrant ministry. So then she decided, well, why don't you have the meetings in the little, that room, you know, that little building that Marquette is using right now, the 40 acres. So it's got light and you can have meetings, so we went and saw it. And I said, fine, sure. Then I thought right away, you know, I said, if I keep having meetings every night here, people will get used to it. You know, they know where the meetings are every night, you know, instead of house meetings. But now that I know that it isn't good, it's better to go to their house, especially when you want to get a deal. But I didn't know it. I didn't know it. So, I mean, to me, it was easier, and that's what I was looking for, something easy for me. So I figured, fast and easy. Because I didn't have to go to their house, they would come there, and if they didn't come, the hell with them. So anyway, so we started having meetings there, and I remember I started bragging about, I was feeling confident then because I helped that lady. And everybody used to tell me, how did you do it? You know, hell, I didn't even know how I done it myself. But I started feeling, getting confidence with myself, and I started bluffing them, you know. I started bluffing the welfare, and I started bluffing people. And it worked. Well, the reason it worked is because I wasn't bluffing. I thought I was bluffing, but they thought I knew. See?
Yeah.
So what I say is, I'm going to call Sacramento, I'm going to call so-and-so. And I remember one time the lawyers, on this case, I'll tell you this case, right? This is the case that really broke it in court. Julio's two brother or cousin-in-laws or something are sort of contractors and they have trucks, you know, and they've got schooling and they're the leaders in Corcoran, the one. And everybody looked up into them because they had a little money and they were smart and this. So they came into me and I said, I'll help in anything you want and wages and this and that. So the guy said, Mr. Chavez, he says, tell you what, I said, I got a little case you can help me. He says, I just got took for $800 in the beat. Says, and I've been trying to get it for 6 months. You get me those wages and I'll organize Corcoran for you. So I says, after the meeting, I says, I'll talk to you. And you give me the rundown and I'm not sure that we'll get the money, but I'm sure that I'll work until we get it. So he gave me the rundown what happened. He used his truck and he was hauling beets, and then this farmer bankrupt. And then the reason I found out is because he gave me his name and address and everything. And then when I talked to him, I remember he was a little sassy. Actually, he wasn't even thinking of me fixing that thing up. Actually, what he wanted to do is make me look bad in front of the people, you know.
Yeah.
So then when I talked to him about it, I said, he says, don't even bother. He says, I'll tell you. He says, should I spend $300 for an attorney? And he couldn't do nothing. He says, I know you damn well can't do nothing. And he shook me up a little bit when he said that. He said, well, maybe I can't. I said, well, give it to me, you know. And I said, I'm not promising you that I'll get you the money. I said, I'll promise you that I'll do all I can. Oh, he says, if you get it, he says, I'll give you half for your organization. I said, fine. So he gave me the name of the rancher. He was in Hanford, between Hanford and Corcoran, and then his name and everything, and how much he owed him, how many truckloads, and, you know, the pay slips they gave him and all that stuff. So I went knocking the door on the rancher, you know, and the guy opened the door and said, sorry, my name is Manuel Sargent. I'm with United Farm Workers. Oh, no. I'm with the National Farm Workers Association and all that kind of shit. I said, I'd like to talk to you. Sure, what do you mean? So I said, look, I'm representing Mr. So-and-so, and we have a lot of power in Sacramento, and we don't want to hurt you, and all that bullshit that goes with it. I said, then you owe this money to him. I said, then, you know, you'll have to pay him. That's all there is to it. And we'll take further steps if you don't, you know. And he said, Mr. Shannon, he says, I'll tell you what I've told everybody else. He says, I don't deny that I owe that man $807. He says, I owe it to him. And the guy's been so good to me, he says, before, that I'm ashamed, I don't know what to do, but if I haven't got it, I haven't got it. I said, well, what did you do with all your money? He said, I bankrupted him. And then he started telling me, I said, well, tell me, how did you bankrupt? I really didn't know what I was doing. I was just playing the part, you know.
Yeah.
So he started telling me, look, he says, I had some beets and I had some cotton. I had cotton over here. And I says, whereabouts? And then I got the address and it says, and who was giving you money? He says, FHA. I write down, what's the name of the FHA guy? And I said, well, how come you bankrupt? I says, don't you know that when you bankrupt, the first ones you pay is your employers? I mean, your employees? He said, well, I know that. He says, but he says, I'll tell you. He says, I went and signed a note. He says, about 4 days before I bankrupt, so they could lend me $8,000 to pay everybody. He says, and then I signed the note, and then pretty soon FHA brought me the check, and I signed it, and I thought they were going to pay it, and they didn't pay it. There's something fishy here. See? Because FHA is not supposed to lend money if you know the guy's going to go bankrupt. You see, the government had to pay the bill. But what happened, on me acting smart, you know, like I knew what I was doing, I was going the right direction, but yeah. I didn't know it. But really, I didn't know it, you know. I was just...
Yeah.
In fact, I think I was making myself believe I was working, actually, for not being over there.
Yeah.
Really. And I was hitting it right.
Yeah.
So I said, all right. And I said, I owed money to the ginning company, and I owed money to, because they lent me money for the cotton, and so I owed money to this. I said, fine. So I went to the gin. I said, how come this man didn't get paid? The truck and the beats. Oh, he says, I don't know, Mr. Chavez. He says, we don't have nothing to do with it. He owed us $5,000. Oh, and then I found out that the beat thing, I came to Visalia and they just loaned him $2,500.
Who did?
The government, where they lend you money on the beach, USDA.
Oh, yeah.
See? And they told me, he says, in fact, he's got 2,500 years. He says, but we can't give it to him. They're attached. I said, by who? By the cotton gin, and then by the what's the name of the FHA?
It was a mix-up.
Deal. But it was a tricky mix. See, what happened, later on, I found out, what happened, they knew he was going bankrupt, and they knew the gin company was going to go lose all that money because he loaned him all that money. So they told him, go get a loan, FHA. See? Mm-hmm. And it was a cahoots with the gin and the FHA.
FHA.
All right. Yeah, now.
Squeezed out.
All right. And then make a loan, sign it, they pay him, and then you go for bankrupt. So who loses? The government.
Yeah. Yeah.
See? Yeah. All right. So I went to the gin and I says, well, FHA's. And then I saw a little sort of scare on them. You know, I sensed it. I said, and I got tough like a bulldog, so I went at with FHA. I said, all right. I said, God damn it. I said, you owe this, blah, 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 blah. I said, why come you didn't pay? Well, Mr. Chavez, he says, who do you work for? I says, I work for National Farm Workers Association in Delano, California. Well, Mr. Chavez, he says, look, you might as well forget it because attorney so-and-so had the case and you go talk to him. I said, I'm not going to go talk to nobody. I'm in this case now. And I'm going until I go broke or get it. I said, besides, I said, I'll call Sacramento right now and I'll talk to some legislators down there that I know and senator. You know nobody, shit. I didn't know nobody. No. Oh, and then I found out that the head man of the FHA over there in Sacramento, his name, and I said, I'll call Mr., I forgot his name, so-and-so. And he said, well, Mr. Chavez, there's no need for that. So, I think I'm hitting it. So he says, when he says, who do you work for? And then I told him, he says, well, Mr. Chavez, come back tomorrow morning. So, the next morning I came, he says, he was tough then. He said, who in the hell are you anyway? I said, I told you. He says, don't bullshit me. I said, I looked all over the telephone. I couldn't get that. Well, where in the hell is that telephone number? We didn't have a telephone number. We didn't even have a... I think they called the farmers or they called somebody
yeah.
there. We didn't know nobody about
association.
Yeah, we don't know nobody over there.
Yeah.
And I said,
yeah.
In the Delano National Farm Works. Who in the hell are those guys?
Yeah.
So he got tough. He said, oh, bullshit, you know.
Yeah.
I said, oh, I got them. And I said, you know, blah, blah, blah. Here's what you... Oh, in the meantime, I went and looked where his ranch was, and then I came and asked FHA how much money they loaned him for the cotton. I says, and then I found out that they loaned him... Oh, he even told me, the rancher says, hell, in fact, he says, I'll tell you, he says, how bad it is. He says, I was only supposed to plant 50 acres, and they gave me for 60. I said, baby, and then something... The guy that won't break glass, he was sincere.
Yeah.
He was sincere. They took him to for a ride. He was sincere. And so I said, besides you, he says, you gave too much money for this, for the allotment of the cotton. He shouldn't have had that much, and you gave him that money. Well, Mr. Charlie says, let's not get into that. Said, because, you know, I said, he says, there was a little corner there that we just said, well, why don't I go ahead and get it, you know, might as well. What you going to do, Mr. Charlie? I said, I don't care. I said, you're wrong and you know it. I said, you didn't pay these guys. I said, look, I said, it's 9:30 right now in the morning. I said, I'll give you 20 minutes to make that goddamn check for $850. I said, or I'm going to call Sacramento. I'm tired of you guys. And you know that I got a lot of stuff on you guys. Well, Mr. Chavez, what? Hold on. So this guy got the phone, dialed to the gym. He says, you mean to tell me the gin, I don't know his name, it was a gin company. He didn't pay that guy that worked? I said, hell no. So he called. Here's what the guy told me. He says, I don't know what his name was, John, I don't know what his name. He says, what the hell do you mean by not paying Mr., I don't know what's his name in Corcoran, the $840 for his services of the truck and his work? I don't know what the other guy
said. Who was he talking to? The guy that went bankrupt?
No, to the
gin.
Gin.
Yeah.
I said, set up. See. So he said,
I'll send Mr. Chavez down there and you talk to him. So I went back to the team. I thought I was going to get the chance. So they said, Mr. Chavez, he said, you know, we lend this man money and he's supposed to pay him, you know. I said, look, I'm not going to be running around in circles. I said, who in the hell got the money? So this guy got the phone, called the guy in the FHA. I says, look, he says, I found out from Mr. Chavez that this rent, another renter, didn't pay that guy. And we gave him the money to pay him. But he said, you know what? He says, Mr. Chavez ain't going to be running around in circles no more. We'll settle that. We'll get him. Just make him the check. That's all right. Make him the check for it. And we'll get whatever the renter's name was. And we'll make him pay it. Is that all right with you? Well, fine. All right, I'll send Mr. Chavez over there and you make him that check. Is that all right with you?
You have, then.
Uh-huh. So I went back. $845. He said, you want me to make it to your name? I said, no, make it to the guy's name. It took me 1 week. Okay, so that broke it right there. That really broke
it. But that guy couldn't believe it.
No. In fact, Caesar went with me when I went and took him the check. I kind of... I was so proud of myself then that I thought I had the world in my hands, you know? Because they bluffed me with advice, you know? I think that was it. I think I took a challenge. Yeah. Because I knew they were laughing at me.
Yeah.
You know? But what I wanted to do is I wanted to try. Mm-hmm. And I didn't think I was going to get it, but just to show them that I would help them, you know?
Yeah.
That's all.
Yeah.
I really didn't want to do it. So I came back to Galeno. I said, Caesar, look what I've done. And I explained to Caesar. She said, oh, that's... They got a record. He showed them. Okay. To boot, the renter got $2,500 that they had hold over here. FHA had a $2,500 hold over here.
You got that too?
The renter got it. Okay. So Caesar said, let's go and take him to check. And oh, by that time, in that week, them guys were talking around town. Oh, hell, he can spit in my eye. They told Julio, you spit my Julio, because they don't get along together. Julio was rough at that time, and they were too, you know. So he said, you can spit in my eye, he says, if you get that money. He says, you can have the whole damn money for your organization. You know, boom, all that week, you know, ribbing Julio and me too, you know. So when we went down there, we worked for Julio, and Julio came with me, and he says, all right, goddamn, where do I spit your goddamn eye? Here's a check. The guy saw the check, he couldn't believe it, you know. He says, oh, how in the hell have you guys done it? I said, well, we got connections in Washington. Bluffing our way through. So the guy said, well, he says, I said, you take half. Caesar said, no, we're not going to take half. This is your money and you worked it. And we just want you to know that this organization is to help people, not to get paid. He said, but no. Caesar said, now, all we want is what we spend on gas. And then he turned around to me and said, man, how much gas did you spend? I said, no, we guessed it. Well, I went to Visalia 2 times. I went to Hanford about 4 times. And that's it. Just maybe $12, I don't know, 15. No, he says, I told you I was going to give you half and we'll give you half. He says, no, we're not going to take the money. He says, if you want to give us a little over the gas and stuff, or keep on buying gas to help other people, fine. But we want you to help us. We want you to understand that we were tough then. We want you to help us. He said, I'll do all I can. I got a lot of people. If you start coming to my house, I'll take you to introduce you. Which they did. They did do a lot of that. They didn't stay in the organization, but they did open it up for us. Because they were known in the town, and everybody respected them because they were intelligent. And they started talking good about us because we didn't take the money. But he gave us $50 a time, if I remember right. I think he said, he got the wallet, and he says, here, $50. There's no $15. He says, well, you really want to give it to us for gas? We'll have somebody else, but not, but we don't want it. He says, keep it, and I'm happy. He says, and you'll get, he says, we want some work from you. Right. And they did. They did a lot of work for us. They helped us. And it started it. Corcoran.
Yeah.
To make a long story short, in about 45, in about 2 months, I think, let me see, October, must have been 2 months later, we had the big organization, no, any more than that, 60 days or maybe 75 days after we started organizing there, I had the meeting, and we had the rally there at the American Legion, and we came out with 125 paid members. In fact, I remember, Fred, that day was gonna. I was scared because I said, nobody comes, you know. That was my first meeting, you know.
Yeah.
My first group meeting.
Yeah.
Where people were gonna come from work and we fixed the hall and we had barbecue. No, we didn't have nothing to eat.
Yeah.
We didn't have no money. Huh?
You had a barbecue later the next year.
No, next year. Yeah, we didn't have none. That was just the first meeting to start signing up people and the first paid meeting, because we weren't asking for pay because we didn't have the insurance. No, I'm still wrong. We had 125 paid members. It couldn't have been paid members because we got the insurance. Hold on. Okay. No, I didn't go. I didn't go to Corcoran the same year. I went in January or the last January because by March we could get paid members now. And I remember I made that meeting to see how many paid members we had ready.
No, you went. So you went the next year to
Corcoran. It was we started when we came back from that meeting in October and September. We worked all that year on getting the papers ready and talking to people and. Getting things set up.
When did you go out to Mendota and Fireball?
Oh, until after Corcoran.
Oh, I see.
After Corcoran, yeah. So then, by March 1st, we already had the insurance, so it must have been after this.
Yeah.
That we got 125, because I know there were paid members.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure there were paid members, because that's when the first paid members we started getting.
And you call them all together.
Yeah, to a meeting.
To a meeting to collect their dues, had you already collected?
No, we couldn't collect because we didn't have no insurance. See, we wasn't collecting no money for it because we didn't have nothing to give them.
Oh.
We said we wouldn't collect no money unless we had something to give them.
But at this meeting, did you collect the money?
I'm sure we collected money. I'm pretty sure.
Or did you get commitments from them?
No, I think the commitments I was getting them while I was organizing. And then I think that day was to really get the members.
I see. So, because you had to turn a certain amount of money in by a certain date in order to get the insurance company to cover you, didn't you?
Right. Sure.
Yeah.
That's what we did. And I think we got 125 of them. Remember right, paid members.
And you were, at that time, you were only shooting for about 500, weren't you?
Well, oh yeah, I remember that. We had a little... thing Caesar and I said we weren't going to get a haircut until we get 500 members.
Well, you had to get a certain number in order to get the insurance company to cover you, didn't you?
500 members. But Caesar and I said, oh, we're not going to get a haircut until we get the 500 members.
Yeah.
So I remember that, and I remember that first day. You know, in the morning I got up early. I couldn't sleep that night. You know, I didn't know if no people was going to show up. You know, I was really worried.
Yeah.
And so, by that time, you know, what I was doing is I was going to go pick cotton in the morning, go early and pick one, just one way, you know, and make maybe $1.50 just to eat, or $2 what I could make. And then come in and start organizing. And I remember that that day at the meeting, I got up early and I went to Julio and I told him I was very nervous. And I went to Sister Ann. I told her I was very nervous. I didn't know. I didn't know what was wrong. You know, it was my first meeting. So they got some wine and gave me some wine and I drank some wine. And then I was going back and forth. I was calling Caesar and
really, and I think the meeting was set for 2 o'clock, and here it was 1 o'clock, and the hall looked empty, and I was getting worried, and so pretty soon people start coming in. Even when it really got me enthused, when I start seeing guys all dirty, you know, irrigators coming in, I said, "Are you coming to the meeting?" He says, "No, well, we're irrigating, but we're coming to the meeting anyway."
How'd you happen to have a meeting there in the daytime?
In the American Legion? Well, they used to lend it to us because, see, the ranchers didn't know that we had the ranchers control that.
Yeah.
But they didn't know that we were a union. We
no, I know that, but how did you happen to have a meeting in the daytime instead of at night?
Well, because it was on a Sunday.
Oh.
It was on a Sunday, and we figured we can get more people there on the Sunday. Mm-hmm. Nobody was working.
Yeah.
So, but there were some irrigators that were working, but they even were coming to the meeting while they were working. We had a pretty big crowd, and I was so happy, you know. So then that day...
So you just started signing them up right there.
Right, yeah. Started signing them up. So then from there on, I got my confidence, you know, and then by that time I knew how to fight the welfare. Oh, I think you heard about the welfare that the investigation we had there.
Where?
In Hanford, for the welfare department. Tinberg was his name, Tinberg, what's the name of that blind guy?
Oh, yeah, uh-huh.
Well,
Tinberg. Yeah, it's T-E-N-N-B, something like, he died.
Oh, he died, huh? Yeah. He was a good guy.
Tenbrook,
yeah, he's a real good guy. So I remember, I think I was the first one that ever put a... I didn't even hear of welfare rights at that time. I don't think there was any welfare rights. And I was the first one to put an investigation there. And the reason, the way I done it is just by, all these things were happening accidentally, you know.
Yeah.
I was just bluffing my way through and they were coming.
Yeah.
They were just coming. I found out that you could call this guy Tinberg and he was very sympathetic. I called him, I told him there was a lot of stuff going on, which it was, you know. The welfare workers there, or the, what do you call them, the
caseworkers
there, were sending women out to work in bars, and so they wouldn't give them any welfare, and there was another fellow that came almost crying to me. He didn't have no wife, and he had four children going to school. And he said that the welfare caseworker came to his house and told him off that he had good furniture and good house, and that he better start working or they weren't going to help him in front of his kids. And I went to his house and I checked it, and he was what he had for chairs were tomato boxes. What he had, and the table was made out of tomato boxes put together with 2x4s in the bottom. And he had an old bed with a torn mattress. The house didn't have no windows, and he had an old wooden stove. And yet the caseworker told him that he had.
That's over in Corcoran?
Yeah, in Corcoran. So I said, and then it's when these ladies start coming in there and giving me complaints about they sent him to work in a bar. And then I went and checked in this bar and I asked the guy, and the guy said, "Yeah, well, this caseworker sent him in to work, so I can give him work." So I used that they were using the caseworkers were prostituting the, that's the case, the word I used, prostituting the recipients.
Yeah, yeah.
And I had an investigation come, and I think Bell was his name. No, it wasn't Bell. I forgot the director's name. And ever since then, they used to come in there and they used to attend me and give people right away the money they needed, you know. So that helped me a lot.
Yeah.
And then from there, I came back to Delano to start helping Caesar again on the leaflets and the Constitution and the bylaws and the credit bank. I remember when we got the charter for the credit bank, I think I was around Mendota, I think, and Caesar called. Or we used to have a clue to call because we didn't have no money. All this was being done without money. So what we used to do at that time, we used to call person to person to a certain phone, and Cesar would be there, and he answered. And then he'd say, no, there's nobody here operated by that name. And then in talking to the operator, we could clue ourselves what we wanted, either come in or don't come in, or I don't want to talk to you, or, you know.
Yeah.
That's what we used to hear. And they used to leave the lines open. They don't do it no more. So in that clue, he told me to come in. He had something important to tell me, so I came in. He says, well, we got a bank now. And he told me the charter, but we didn't have no money. So I said, well, what are we doing now? He said, well, we start making a letter right now and start sending it to our members we have. I think we had about 400 or 500 members. No, 600 members, I think we had, 400, 500 members. Mm-hmm. And we start sending letters out, sending 525 to be a bank member, and here's what you get, blah, blah, blah.
So what do you mean a bank member?
A credit union member.
Oh,
for the bank, you know.
Oh.
Save money. And we have a bank now and started working like that. So I remember we collected $500 right away to the bank. And then immediately, with that $500, we went to the teacher's credit union. And you can borrow double the amount. And then we went and borrowed double the amount. And then we wrote to our members that we had money to lend. And I remember we wouldn't lend over $50. That's where we started. We wouldn't lend over $50. But we wanted to lend as much as we could, you know, to get it going. And we didn't know how to lend money anyway, you know. So we wouldn't lend over $50. And then, you know, the bank has gone up, you know. I think last year we loaned 100 cents. I mean, since the opening of the bank, maybe 3 years, we've loaned... or 4 years, we've loaned $180,000 out of nothing. So it's sure has grown a lot.
Yeah.
And then we started organizing closer to Delano because of the fact that we didn't have no money to pay the gas. We had a credit card, and I remember Helen winning $100 in the Safeway. I shouldn't mention Safeway.
Well, that was
people, yeah. $100. She won on one of them games they had there.
Money.
So Helen came running to the. I remember we were there. She was very happy because we were going to buy some food and meat. We haven't eaten meat for a long time. She said, "No, you're not. We're going to pay the gas bill. We owe dues behind
yeah.
on the gas."
Yeah.
And
you're going to lose your credit card.
Yeah. So we started organizing close to town, you know, as much as we could, and working with people. And then in 1963, and then in 1963, about the last 1963 was really hard up for money. It was barely going, and then we didn't have no money, and we were broke, and that, and. I told Cesar, well, I want to go work and help you as much as I can. He says, if you go work, he says, you're not going to be able to do more work. I said, yeah, I'll help you. I says, I'll help you all I can. So he says, no, you might not want to go to work. I said, yeah, I want to go work. He says, I'll work only about a month or 2 months to get enough money to come back and help, you know, and help you with the thing. So what I did is I went and worked, and I worked exactly 2 months, and I stole $800. And we paid some things we had to pay, but they sent me to prison.
Who were you working for?
With this guy, a produce company here in Bakersfield. And this is the first time this had ever come out. I haven't told nobody.
You took a vacation, man.
Yeah. Nobody knew about it. Well, just Cesar and I. I never told nobody that. I stole the $800, and I think it was $800, and we paid some bills we had to pay and stuff like that. And Cesar didn't know I stole it. But then a month later, he knew I stole it because he put me in prison. And they wouldn't give me a chance. They could have given me a chance. They could have given me, I want to ask probation. I tell them I'd pay them back and forth, and they wouldn't do it. But they knew what we were doing by that time.
Yeah, yeah.
See?
and no dice.
Yeah.
So I made 14 months, and then I came back again, and we've been ever since here. Then we started the strike in 1965.
Yeah.
And I guess you know.
You were gone then from about the, well, late in 63 until about
64. Came back in September.
64.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And then in September 65 we went on strike.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So do you remember what you were doing between the time you came back from prison until you went on strike?
Yeah.
We okay.
Well, see, I came back and I remember that they were going to give me that farm workers parole, you know, where you go out and work on the farm and, you know. And then I remember they told me my parole was ready, but they wouldn't let me out, and I was wondering what was happening. So what was happening is that they didn't want to come and let me come out to the organization, you know.
Oh.
So when I came out, they told Caesar I could come out, that they would let me out, but they couldn't come and work down here. I had to work with somebody. So what I did is I came and got a job with a store over here. What's the name of that store?
On Garces?
No, on 11th.
Oh, yeah.
Well, the grocery store there.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked there, and then I was helping in between, you know,
mm-hmm.
distributing leaflets and stuff like that. Oh, going back, I remember we used to distribute leaflets all over California. And the way we used to do it is, I used to take all the kids, Caesar's kids, and Hal and everybody, and we used to get in the car, station wagon, and distribute leaflets all over town.
What year was this?
That was the beginning.
Very beginning.
Yeah, 1963. We used to go to town to just distribute leaflets.
63 or 62?
62.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we used to distribute leaflets in towns, you know. And
where would you distribute them?
In the houses, house to house.
House to house?
Yeah.
And stores? And
everywhere, yeah. About the organization and about organizing, this is what you get. And, but
what would you do? Start at that end of the valley and start working north?
Yeah.
What would you do?
We would just, well, see, for, we couldn't go too far because we didn't have money, we didn't have too much gas, we couldn't go too much on gas, you know, because.
Yeah.
We didn't have too much money to go, and so we were just sort of holding back, I guess, as much as we could.
Mm-hmm.
But
you went to all the nearby towns?
Yeah, all over here, Rich Grove, Early Martin, Pixley, close around here, you know. And
this is before you actually started going in and having house meetings?
Yeah.
Just to let them know about it, huh?
Right, let them know about the organization.
I wonder if any of those leaflets, are those the same leaflets?
I had some. You know, I'll tell you what.
Short paragraphs?
Yeah. I'm looking for them. I got 11 boxes of stuff stashed away, yeah. And in fact, I had two of them. Of them right here that my wife brought. I'm going to start bringing them in.
Oh, good.
I'm going to start looking for them, and I'm looking for them leaflets. I
yeah,
want it so bad.
Not any place else.
No.
So much stuff got burned over there, you know.
Oh, yeah, I know. Even those cards got lost, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. We lost a lot of stuff, the old stuff that we had.
Yeah.
Did
he have newsletters? He was, you know, you guys were getting newsletters at that time, and he can't find those either.
Yeah, newsletters? No. I remember we used to make a lot of this stuff. You know what? Talking about funny things, you know, I remember one time we was coming from Stockton, Caesar and I, and we was very hungry. I remember we was very hungry. From Sacramento, I think. And I was so hungry that I was mad, you know. And he was always joking, you know, and we were coming, and then he said, "Well, that's all right." He says, "When we have this organization built, he says, right now we're hungry. Next 10 years, we used to say 10 years from now, he says, we'll be driving an airplane, ordering T-bone steaks." I said, "The hell with the T-bone steak! I wish I had a big plate of beans right now, big one, you know." And I'd be satisfied with that.
And then things like that, we used to come out and crack, you know, like that. I remember one time when I was in Corcoran, I was very hungry. I think I didn't eat for a day and a half or 2 days. You know how you get hungry the first 2 days. And I remember I went to sleep in the station wagon, and I couldn't sleep because I was so damn hungry. So I said, well, it was too foggy to go to Delano, you know, to come to Delano. And I didn't want to come, so I said, I'll go in the morning better. I was tired. So then I think I was half asleep and half awake because I started seeing chickens and food and stuff, you know, or either that or I was weak, I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
So I couldn't take it. I had to get up and...
You were delirious.
Probably that's what it was, you know, half asleep. I thought I was dreaming, so I woke up. It was about 12 o'clock at night, and I just got on the station wagon and came to Delano. Remember, Helen got up that night when I come in about 1:30. She got up and made me a whole pot of beans, you know, ate. The next morning I got up, I was mad, and I told her I was going to quit, and the hell with this, you know. And she just said, well, why, you know, and I told him that I was tired and all this bullshit, you know. So I remember Caesar saying, no, you don't want to quit. He says, you're tired. I said, I'm not tired. Hell, I can go on forever. I just don't want to go through this thing. And then from somewhere he got $5. Because I used to like to drink a lot. I used to.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then he says, here's $5. He says, go get drunk. I said, bring them over. They gave them to me, and I went to people. And I think I got drunk for 2 days with $5 because everybody knew I didn't have money. They were treating me, but it made me feel good because I had it there anyway. So then I had a hangover for about 2 days, so that was four. And then I was all right. And then he said, how do you feel? I said, I'm ready to go to work again. So I went at him again. But, another guy here never forgets, you know, and he's a contractor. He lives not far from here, Guevara. He gave me a pair of boots, and they had a hole right in the middle, but he gave them to me. But they were better than nothing. I didn't have no shoes, you know. So he gave them boots, and I remember I was in Corcoran, and we was going to have a meeting. There was a lot of those, what do you call them, stickers, those, the cuernito, what do you call them?
Oh, yeah, what do you call them? Burrs. Burrs, yeah.
Yeah, those little, they got three little things like that.
Yeah.
So I remember that I got down, there was a lot of them around there, you know. And I got down, it was dark, so I didn't see it, you know, we just had a little light bulb. And I started walking, bam, I think one got me right in the middle, you know. And boy, it just went right in, and I started walking like this. I didn't want to, you know,
yeah,
get down. And so the little girl says, look, Mama, how funny that man walks. I was walking like this, you know, I didn't want to stick there. So I said, I don't walk funny. So I got the thing out, everybody started looking at the thing, you know. And, gosh, I don't know.
Do you remember anything about Mendota and the way you organized out there?
Well, we started, I went the same way as Corcoran. Actually, it wasn't Mendota, actually, it was in Fireball.
Fireball.
Yeah, I went the same way, and by that time, I had a guy over there that they call, I forgot his name, nickname. So I went over there, and by that time I had one or two leads from Corcoran to see somebody. Over there I went direct to their house, and then they said, sure, right away they made me a meeting. That was more active thing going on, you know.
Yeah.
The Corcoran was just
yeah.
I don't know, you know, whatever comes around, that's what I was doing.
Yeah.
And so then when I went over there, it was more like an organizing thing. I remember that this guy I was looking for, they told me he was out bringing sand because the road, it just rained a lot and they couldn't even get in the house, you know. Like, tal si puedes.
Yeah.
And they got a sort of a cooperative guys, and they got a truck and they were going getting sand from the or dirt from the gravel from the river and dumping it there, fixing it. So I went looking for him, and I found him in the river over there. There was about five guys. I said, and I started shoveling with him, you know, helping him. And I knew one guy there. I didn't know him. He was just recommended to me. I talked to him, and I started helping him. And so we took the truck load, and then we took another one. I went like mad helping him, you know. So then they said, they asked him where I was, told him what I was going for. Sure, they said, we'll get together. So he started calling me, had cell phone calls and friends. He said, oh, we're going to meet in the bar over there. So I liked it, you know. I said, good, let's go to the bar. So then I remember he was buying beer, and I said, don't buy me any beer, Rasta, because I haven't got no money. And I told him how we were working and we were broke, and, you know, I didn't want you to spend because I haven't got no money to buy you beer. In fact, I said, in fact, if you really want to help me, I said, instead of buying beer, buy me something to eat, you know. I said, you haven't eaten? You don't eat? And I said, no. And then I told him we didn't have no room. So immediately he took me to eat and rent me a room right there in the back of the bar. Rent me a room right in the back of the bar. He said, how many days do you want to stay here? Well, I said, well, I want to stay at least 2 or 3 days. So he did. He rent me a room right in the back of the bar, I remember. And gave me something to eat. I started working on them down there. I just stayed there about 2 or 3 days. We had some members. Still, we have some members over there right now. And then
the ones that Dave works with a little bit once in a while.
I think so. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The yeah. Same guys. So, and then then she said, well, we shouldn't be wasting too much time in one town like we did in Corcoran, you know. She says, let's go just make a business and then start working on themselves and see what happens. So we start going, like I did, to Fargo. I stayed 3 days and let the committee start working themselves, you know. Mm-hmm. Then we went to a different town and let them start working on themselves. And mm-hmm. That's where we started working.
Mm-hmm.
And
then you came back. In 64.
From the joint?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. 64, September.
Yeah.
September 64.
Yeah.
Right. And then started again.
And then I guess the next, well, the first, then you had the first strike, didn't you? In 64. No.
No, 65. Yeah, September the 16th.
No, I mean the one in the Rosa.
I wasn't here for that one.
Oh, you were. That's when you were gone.
Yeah.
Oh.
I came in after that. Right after that I came in.
Oh, well, you didn't get back until 65.
No, 64.
Well, was it?
Uh-huh.
And they'd already had the Rose strike?
Yeah.
In 64 they had the Rose strike?
Mm-hmm.
Come on.
Yeah. See, because I organized the first strike meeting in the Guadalupe Church. Remember?
I wasn't here.
Oh, you wasn't here. Okay.
No, that was for the big strike, you mean?
Yeah, in 65. September the 16th, 1965.
Yeah. Well, then you came back here in
64, September the September 64.
Well, then when was the road strike?
Must have been early 64. Oh. Must have been, I think it just in August, because that's when the roads started.
Well, were you here when they had when Gil called that strike at Martin's? Up in Ducor? Up by Ducor?
I think I was, but I couldn't involve because I was in parole.
Oh, that's right. You were working the store.
Yeah, but I was at night. I was helping. See, I used to go out and super leaflets or stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was in parole and they were watching me pretty close. Well, then after that they didn't watch me. I almost did.
Well, how long were you on parole?
I was supposed to go on parole for 22 months, but they let me off before time. Because
well, weren't you on parole when you worked for CCDC or whatever?
Yeah. I was there.
But you organized the strike anyway. mean, you organized people.
Yeah, I organized the
parole.
Yeah. And then I was organizing Elmendon too, and Galvin over there, you know, when we were over there. Not really, more Elmendon than anyone. Working down there for CCCD.
Yeah.
And then the march, remember the march?
Yeah, what about the march?
Well, the march was on March, wasn't it? The 17th we took off?
Why don't you start with the organizing the strike meetings?
Well, we started, I think the first meeting we had that night was when we talked about the strike. What happened was, see, it didn't take us too long because, see what happened, the Filipinos went on strike September the 8th, mm-hmm. on a Monday, on strike, and then the that same day, members of ours came to the office and said, they're striking over there, what we do? And we used to say, don't break the strike, you know, you're union guys, and don't break the strike. Go somewhere else. Say, go somewhere else and say, well, they're striking over there, what are we going to do? And more people start coming in, you know, the guys are struck with it. Because we had most of the farm worker Mexican guys are organized, you know. And they start coming in, so then, I think it must have been on a Friday, must have been about three days after about the 10th or the 11th, that Caesar said, well, hell, we must call a meeting and call our members and see what they want to do. He said, okay. So he said, well, what do you do? What do you want to do? What should we do? He said, let's get some leaflets going. And I said, well, I'll get the meeting going. I'll get a meeting. He said, you think you can get a lot of guys on? I said, damn right, we can get a lot of guys. We've got a lot of members here. And we'll take a meeting at the Popeyes Hall. And in fact, we tricked the guy into lending the hall. We didn't tell him what it was for. And we started passing leaflets in the stores and all over, strike meeting for the National Farm Workers Association, blah, blah, blah. And we had about 800-900 people. It was packed, jam-packed.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was on a Friday, the 14th. No. Friday, Saturday. No, it was 16th when we stroke, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
Monday. 16th of September.
Right.
So Friday was then the 14th.
Right.
Saturday the 5th. No. 13th. Friday the 13th. Saturday 14th. Sunday 15th. And Monday 16th.
Yeah.
We stroke.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's when we made that big meeting and everybody voted to have a strike and what we were going to ask for. $1.40 an hour, I remember. And they were only paying $1.10, $1.15 an hour. And then a year later when we marched to Sacramento?
No.
2 years later.
Hell no, it was right, it was a few months later. That was in September, and you made the march in March.
In 66, right? March of 66, following year. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So how did you organize that?
Well, that one, we had another meeting in my house over here. I was living on the other side of town. And that meeting was Dolores, Caesar, Jim Drake,
Chuck
Gardner, Marshall Gantz, and I. And if there was somebody else, I don't remember. Wasn't you there?
No.
It wasn't there. And then I remember that Caesar said, well, I want you to be in charge, you know, on the organizing front. And Dolores says, well, I want to help. And I said, no, I don't want no help, Dolores said, because, you know, how you mess things up for people. And I said, either you take it or I take it.
Yeah.
And I said, well, I'll agree. And then she said, well, you don't have to be so greedy, you know, I can. So we already talked to Caesar about this, that we didn't want Dolores Melendez, because she goes like a hay fire and then she messes everything up. Which we couldn't keep her anyway.
Yeah.
So I agreed. I said, Dolores, if you want to help, I says, let's split it in half. I said, you take from I think it was Merced on down to Sacramento, and I'll take it from Merced on down to here. Yeah, but you don't butt into my end of it, and I won't butt into your end of it. So she said, no. I said, Dolores, you're going to stay here. And then, in fact, he left Dolores in an office with a lot of work, you know, so she wouldn't mangle. And then we planned there how we was going to do it. We was going to let the farm workers support us in the way, give us water, and if we could get bands, we could get orchestras or people that wanted to help, you know, and the march and join the march in Sacramento. So Dolores was mad and she was crying because Caesar told her she was going to stay in the office and she better not get on that telephone and call nobody and tell them nothing. And for her to stay put in the office and give her a lot of work, you know, extra work. So I remember when we got out of that meeting, it was 11:30 at night, or 12. That same night, Dolores got Manuel Urrandy and Tony Mendez and told them, come on, go with me, take me. So that same night, she took off to Porterville and visiting people, knocking at the hotel, and there's going to be a march coming over, and I want you to do this and this. The same night, next day we're looking for Dolores, and by the time I was going to start the next day right away, so I went to Porterville and I said, well, this is the way we're going to do it, you know. They're going to be marching and we want people to take the lunches. They can only march to Ducor, but we don't have enough people there to give them food. Well, they said, no, Dolores was here last night and she said that it's better for us to take the lunches out, bring them over here to eat and then take them back. I said, who? Dolores. When? Because, you know, that was the next morning. I was over there organizing it already. She was already been there. That same. And then I said, did she call you? No, but she was here last night. Jeez. I said, what time? He said, about 12. She got to let me in and got on the car. And then I said, honestly. And she didn't come back for 2 days. She went all through.
She did.
That's Caesar. And I hit the point where I called Caesar. I said, that dirty, you know how I tell Caesar, the son of a gun, that door has been over here. And sure enough, every time I went, there was some different. Then we went to Visalia and I went to, well, Fresno, I talked to, well, the. Mrs. Huerta was here, and she said that you're going to be walking through here, and oh God.
So what did you do?
Nothing. I was just wait, you know. She just made a fast run, you know, telling people that, and maybe they asked her, well, what we're going to do? Well, you do this, you do that, you know.
Yeah.
And
she didn't tell them you'd be coming after her.
No, yeah, she told me, but she said, this is what we're going to want. You know?
Yeah.
And, but I guess, I remember that, well, the way we organized it, Fred, is we went to the first town and I said, well, we're going to march to Sacramento, and this is what we want, and we need the hospitality, we need to sleep in your houses, we need for you to furnish us with the food, and if you feel like you should lose a day's work for these people that are going to march all the way to Sacramento to fight for what, you know, you guys need. You should waste one day of work at least if you can't walk with them down there. Mm-hmm. But it got so enthused that people start marching, you know, and people with little bands and little things come out. And I remember this wasn't organized. This was things that started happening afterwards. Yeah. We passed Porterville and there was a lady saw the thing coming and well, what made it good was the police department here in Delano really organized it for us. Because they stopped us. And then we went on TV and they held us about 3 hours, I think. And it went through TV and news and everything. They gave us a
little. They wouldn't let you march to town?
No, they wouldn't let us march to town. They wanted us to march around town. So they gave us a publicity. Really. Yeah. Started it real good. So then the highway patrol was mad because, you know, they thought they were wrong, the police was wrong. And then in Porterville, people got enthused and started marching, and they kept on going. And then I went to Visalia.
What would you do? You went to Porterville.
Mm-hmm.
And you didn't go to Ducor, huh?
No. Ducor, there was only one house we had to go there.
But they stayed there anyway.
Yeah, because that was a long, you know, yeah. Ducor was a long, I mean, Porterville was a long march.
And then from there they went to Porterville.
Yeah, we were figuring 12 miles to 14 miles a day.
Yeah.
Averaging. Mm-hmm. I think we took 22 days to get over there.
Yeah.
Sort of like that. And then Porterville brought the food over, you know, to them. And then they waited for them over there in Porterville. They had a little chinding there. And then it started getting a lot of publicity. By the time we got to Visalia, there was a lot of publicity going on. And then we got to Del Rey. Was it Del Rey?
But you ended up saying Porterville.
Uh-huh. The first one was Porterville.
And then you left before they got there. I had
some help. I had Manuel Urendi, Tony Oren, Tony Mendez,
Gardner.
No, they were doing something. I think they were in the march, you know, sort of guarding the march and all that. I had some organizers helping me. I forgot all of them. Mm-hmm. And what I would do, I'd have an advanced man, you know. What I'd do is I'd come in and a quick thing in one day and get the group together and then tell them, this is what we need. Now, we need it. And so, okay. So now I'd said, okay, now, Manuel, you stay here. And then as soon as the march comes in and they greet them, you take off and meet me over there and right away. And then I took the other guys
and
set them up.
And you had to stay there to make sure that they did what they were supposed
mm-hmm.
to do.
Right. And then I set them up. I set up the other town fast, you know. In the same day, I'd set two towns. Mm-hmm. And then one guy over there and one here. And then I'd go to the other town, set another guy over there. And then let another guy over here meet him, mm-hmm. the march. Mm-hmm. And then the first guy would go jump over to the other town. I was over there and leave him there. And we were sort of jumping like that.
Yeah, hedge hopping.
Yeah, uh-huh. But after we got to, from Fresno on down, from Turlo, I think, on down, I wasn't doing nothing. I was just coming in and saying, all right, here we are. There's 200-300 coming.
And they knew it, huh?
Yeah, they already, by that time they knew it, people were even prepared before we got there.
Is that right?
Yeah, they were prepared. In fact, when I got to Livingston, I went to see a guy there, and he says, well, we heard about it. And
was the guy in the bar?
Yeah, the guy in the bar, and he's still a friend of mine.
Yeah.
And I remember very plain that I went in there, and he says, well, what I did after this, I wouldn't go ask him. I'd tell him, they're coming, what are you going to do? Mexicans, you know, your fellow Mexicans are coming. So the guy said, well, we'll do something for him. So there was an Anglo guy that I remember. He said, he turned around and told this guy, well, this Chavez group's coming, and we'll have to do something in this town to receive them. Oh, he said, that damn guy, he says, I guess we do have to do something. He said, because hell, the publicity got big now, and we have to do something. We can't just tell them to keep on walking. I wish I could. Says all he's doing is just making money for his pocket. And then Raymond turned around, you know, and told him, that's his brother over there. So the guy looked at me. I says, can you prove this, that we're taking money and putting it in our pocket? Do you know how we're working? Do you know who we are? Have you ever had any word with us? No. I said, well, how in the hell are you talking like that for? And he was, and then Raymond told him, his name, Bird, or I don't know what his name is, says, you shouldn't be talking like that as a city official. You should be respecting these people. You know, it hurts me too, he says, because you shouldn't be saying that. You don't even know the guy. You know. So the guy got shook up and took off right away. I think he was a city official there.
Yeah, yeah.
And he just popped out, you know. After that, I really wasn't working much. I was just coming in and going to the organization and say, hey, they're coming, you know. They'll be here in 4 days, 5 days.
And it would look bad on them, you know, if nobody agreed to me.
Well, you said going to the organization, but how did you know whether there were any organizations?
I should go into the town and ask right away.
Yeah.
Who's here, you know?
Yeah.
The American Citizens Club or... or Mexicans for Poverty or whatever you want to call it. I don't care.
Yeah.
Where are you? And get together. My name is Manuel Chavez, and here comes the people of Sacramento, and there's about 500, 600 coming, and maybe by the time they get here, it'll be 1,000. Well, what can we do? That's up to you. And we need bed. We need. You got to spread around the word. So.
Sometimes did they bring their sleeping bags?
Yeah, they were carrying sleeping bags and trucks and stuff like that. But the people, we there's a lot of help in the way. There's no sweat, you know.
A lot of times they stayed in private homes, huh?
Most of the time in private homes and halls and everywhere they could.
Yeah.
Well, see, it got so big where we couldn't control it no more.
Yeah.
It got out of hand. What I mean out of hand is out of saying that I went to a town and organized 2,000 people to sleep. I put it.
No.
To each his own, you know.
Yeah. And you didn't know. You didn't know how many there was going to be there by then.
No. There was 65 started from here.
Yeah.
When we were on the other side of Puerto Villa, there was 250.
Yeah.
Just one town, actually.
Yeah.
The other side of Visalia, there was 300-400. And then in the other side of Fresno, 600-700, and then they slack down, you know.
Yeah.
People march in days, and then they come back, and then other people march, and then they go.
Yeah. What was about the highest, about 600?
Well, no. I think the one time I was the other side of Modesto. Oh, let me tell you before I get to that. In Turlock, I couldn't find no Mexican farm workers. They were all out. About 15 miles away, you know.
From, yeah.
There's nobody in Tula.
Yeah.
So I went and... So I went to... And they told me that this reporter was very sympathetic to these things, sort of things. And then I remember I made a meeting with all Anglos and students, no Mexicans, you know. And I said, oh boy, here's where it's going to break. I don't know what the hell
I'm going to do. Yeah.
Yeah. And there was some Anglo people there and students.
That girl, Diane, was she there?
No, I didn't know her at that time.
Oh.
I didn't know her. Yeah, I know what you mean, but
yeah.
I didn't know her.
Yeah.
Oh, or she might have been in that meeting, I don't know.
Yeah.
But I remember, it was this lady. I remember she was sympathetic, and I went to her, and she said I would invite a reporter from the Tulloch press here. And everybody told me that that paper was hell, you know, real right wing, but this guy... when I went into the house, I saw they had a peace sign in the sky. I said, man, maybe a good guy, you know. So I went and talked, and he says, two guys got up and says, I'll call the new lake over there, and they give them, I think, 10 cases of eggs right away. And right there in that meeting, I saw $150 come up like that for food. And then... the students say, we're going to go to the college and bring some more money tomorrow, and we're going to greet them, and I was happy. You know. But after, in Merced, I think, where they were going in Modesto, I remember that it was right now, if I would have had a camera, I would have taken a picture of that, because it looked beautiful. They were sort of going like this, and they had to go around like this on an overpass, and then, and at that time I was coming from behind here, because... See, I went so far, and then I used to come back.
You were going south, and they were going north.
They were going north, but I used to come back south and distribute leaflets for people to get to Sacramento if they couldn't march at the same time, see?
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Okay, what happened is Caesar was afraid to make the march. Caesar said that it's a big risk. He says, it's either a do or die, you know, if we make that march and nobody's in Sacramento, we're lost, we're dead,
yeah.
Politically.
Yeah.
So he told me, the only way I'll make the march, I don't know if he remembers you asking, we were in that meeting, he says, the only way I'll make the march is Manuel promised me that he will have over 5,000 people in that Sacramento. I said, I started thinking, started conning myself, and I said, damn right you'll have over 5,000 there. I'll promise you that. He says, you promise? I says, yeah, I promise. I said, can I quit when I know that I have 5,000 people? He said, yeah. So I said, okay. In fact, I'll show you the picture where I was kidding him about that. We were worried. I said, I'm quitting now. I'll show you the picture. So what I told him was that at that time I said, well, I quit. I said, you want to get your 5,000 people? And he was very happy. He says, no, I want 10,000 now. I said, okay. And I says, get me 50,000 leaflets. He says, what? I said, yeah, give me 50,000 leaflets. So we'll go back and, well, then we're going to see, because I don't know if you remember, they still had 4 days to get to Sacramento. I already came back. I just left it. The hell with it. It was already a success, you know. The march was a success. So what the hell? Mm-hmm. So, but I already had gone in town anyway.
Yeah.
And they were waiting for him. But I didn't care if they even...
Yeah.
It was out of order now.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
Yeah.
People just had to do something when they got into the town. So yeah, it was out of hand, you know. So I said, he said, well, call... I think Dolores and Herbert make 50,000 leaflets and what you want and written and all stuff. I said, fine. So we, us guys that were organized, we came back and I told the guys, all right, if you guys want to go to the party in Sacramento, just start going. Start distributing leaflets. Man, so we
distributed. These are all your organizers?
Uh-huh. So we distributed leaflets, 50,000 leaflets, and urged people to go.
Where did you start distributing them?
From Imperial Valley, I think.
Oh, really? From way down there?
Mm-hmm.
My God.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Well, we didn't go down there. We sent some down there.
Yeah.
Sent some down there. And, and then we started from here on.
Mm-hmm.
From here, Porterville.
Yeah.
And urging people to, if you couldn't go on the march, damn it, you should be over there.
Yeah.
You should be over there. And distributing leaflets and radio time and everything. Urging them to be down there. And you saw the picture of the people that were in Sacramento.
I was there.
Oh, you were there?
Yeah.
Oh, we got a picture.
Before.
Huh?
I was there the night before.
I wasn't there because I was all still up. In fact, I remember I was on my way to, I was already going distributing leaflets, and I was in the other side of Stockton, I think. Stockton. When I heard the news, you know, I was on my way to Sacramento. That 8,000 people, and then later on, about 10 minutes later, I heard, turned it to another news, and it said, well, there's 10,000, no telling how many people in the steps of the White House.
Oh, you didn't make it up for that meeting then, huh?
No, I wasn't over there.
Is that right?
Yeah. And when I got over there, I was late. I was already late, you know.
Yeah.
They were given the key, I don't know what the hell. I just went. My wife and I, we just went down there and came right back. I was damn tired, you know.
Yeah, God, okay. But you covered a lot of the towns, huh?
All of them almost. No, I think we got to Stockton, and then I heard the radio, 9,000, 10,000. I said, I just the hell with it, you know.
Yeah.
And I was tired, I was dead tired.
Yeah. By that time, it was too late.
Yeah, they were already taking my room.
Yeah.
I just quit.
I bet you felt good, though.
Oh, yeah, sure.
But you went out and got drunk that night.
No, I was too tired. I was really worried. I was really tired.
Then you came back, and, well, right, not too long after that, you went to work for the CCD or whatever it was, you know.
I was working with CCD when I was doing that much.
Oh, you were at that time, huh?
Yeah. And at the same time, I was organizing Armaden. You want to know how we organized Armaden?
Yeah. Took over at CSO and...
See, what happened is I was getting $700 a month pay from CCD. and expenses. So what I did is I hired out of my own money about 10 guys in Almaden. Not hired them for a lot of money, but guest money. For instance, I hired, I used to give them $10-$15 a week. You know,
yeah.
For these guys, or $5 a week, or what, you know, however they worked. And then I went and you know, when I started organizing, then this Parra, the general manager there, found out, so he said he wanted to talk to me. So he told one of the guys, he called him organizing, he said he wanted to talk to me. So I said, damn right, I'll go talk to him. So I went and talked to him, and he took me out, you know. And he said, I know you're organizing. I says, I know the guys you got working here. He says, I want to help you. The general manager, you know, a big hunk, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't believe him, so I said, well, you can help me. I says, tell you what you can do. I said, how about these guys that I got? I said, spread them out into crews and let one in one crew, one in another, so he can start talking to the people. I said, let him get, let him start signing up cards. He said, well, that's too risky. He said, they catch me, you know. He said, let me go. I said, well, I said, what can you do? He says, well, I'll do anything. He said, I believe in the movement. I believe in the stuff. So I said, okay. I said, can you, you know, I won't tell the guys that you're doing this. I said, just me and you will know this. But you sort of let them work, you know, let them get into their, where they're working, you know. He says, fine, sure. And then he says, why don't you come back Sunday and I'll have a meeting with all the, that's my small, small foreman. Mm-hmm. So that was too good to be true, you know. So I said, sure, and I went. And so he had a meeting with all the foremen who were drinking there. And they told him who I was, and I talked to all the foremen. So. Well, they had to agree, you know, Parra told them to come, so the hell could they do? But I still wasn't trusting him too much, but then he was helping very good up to the last minute. When we had the car checked, that day he chickened out.
Is that right?
I don't know why. He just chickened out. He just went against us. 2-3 days later before the car check, he started working against us. And he got fired.
He did.
Got fired. And
he found out he was working for you.
No. They were stealing money. They were stealing a lot of stuff.
Oh.
See, what happened when we had the car check, I think that's why he started working against me. He didn't know I don't think he knew how this was going to go about, you know. He was just probably going to think, well, they're just going to win and that's all over, you know. And he was going to keep on doing what he was doing, I guess. But when he found out that it was going to be a card check, he got scared and he started going against it.
Mm.
So when we had the card check, I know I had 100% cards, you know. And there was a lot of names coming out. And no cards. So I looked at Luna every time, you know, a whole bunch of them, and I looked at the other organ. There was five guys there. I looked at them, I said, what the hell's going on with you guys? How come these guys didn't get? So one of the guys that were with me there, Ortega, he's been there working there. Well, in fact, he's number 38 in the list now, Ortega. I looked at him, and he looked at me. And I looked at him saying, what the hell happened, you know? Hearing all these names and no card.
And the one-eyed bandit, the one-armed bandit was there?
Oh, that's the tough one?
No, the Duncan.
Yeah, that's him. I saw Parra was in there, boy, he was sweating, you know. Mm. All these guys, looking at these guys. And so I finally said, wait a minute. We broke down for 5 minutes. I told the guys, damn, you guys didn't do a damn good job like you told me. I thought we had 100%. You know, well, we had everybody.
And Papa said, well, some of these guys quit, you know. I said, hell, we've been organizing you for over a year and a half. So Ortega said, hell, I don't even remember these. I don't even know these names. I never heard of them. And I've been here 6, 7 years. No, 10 years or something like that. And then later on we found out that there were dummy names in there.
Who was responsible for that? Parra?
Right. And then another time we found out, another thing is that Czechs wouldn't match with the signature of the card. And what he was doing is when they didn't work, when they rained, he still gave them a check, but he signed it.
But did you win that card check anyway?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Even though he put in a lot of dummies, though.
No, but he was doing that to win the card check.
Huh?
He was stealing money.
Oh, yeah, I know. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we won it pretty, we got almost 85% or 90%. 90%, 97%.
Yeah.
Pretty close. But just the guys that he had there,
yeah.
Almost everybody signed. Everybody signed, in fact.
Yeah.
But not the guys he won. There was no such a thing as them people. They were so hard to face. So, and that was done under the CCCD thing.
Yeah.
And that's why they got their money taken off, you know.
Yeah.
Gupser found out. And
He
went and checked me.
Nice article in the Fresno Bee about you.
Well, from personal being in San Jose paper.
Yeah.
And the Los Angeles Times, I think somebody said that I came out saying that organizing with government money and all that stuff.
Was that, did you have to leave CCCD soon after that?
Yeah.
Oh.
Not when the program ended, quit.
Huh?
The program, they took the program away from
us. Oh, I see. Well, they didn't.
From us.
I see. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then, you know, and then I was. Came back down here.
Yeah. When did you come back down here from that?
As soon as the program ended, I was working with them all the time.
Oh, I know that, but I'm...
How was it getting paid by the
system? I remember when we were working on DiGiorgio, on Sierra
Vista,
you came down here.
To help,
And you went out there with me one day, but you didn't want you to get involved in that because of your parole.
Parole, yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. I was just working undercover most of the time. And Caesar didn't think I was going to go. I told him I was going to get out, and then he didn't believe me. He said, oh, you're crazy. So when we were ready, you know, to get out, and then when I called him up and told him that we were ready to hit it, because I went and tested him. Caesar didn't want to. He says, hell, I don't want to get another strike. I says, hell. I says, I'll go hit him, and I'll ask him for recognition and all this. And I says, and if the guys jump and they want to strike, I says, you just... make a big blast at me that I didn't have no right to go ask him for an election. I didn't have no. And, you know, you set yourself free of everything.
Yeah, yeah.
But no, he took the bluff. You know.
Yeah.
Well, they took the bluff because they had all the people. We had all the people organized.
Yeah.
They had. There wasn't a bluff, actually.
Yeah.
It was, because if they would have known that Caesar wasn't going to go into no goddamn strike with them.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And,
then did you go to work on Christian Brothers after that? Or what was the next one you went to work on?
I went to work in Marysville.
Oh.
The strike, you know, for the DiGiorgio in Marysville.
That was until 67, though. Huh?
67, yeah.
Yeah.
67,
yeah.
And that was a good deal over there. In fact, I think that the organizing was well done that we lost. See what happened? What happened was, I think now, I might be wrong, but what happened is I went down there and started organizing all the workers, started talking to all the workers way ahead of time, and had them all lined up, all ready to go, and in fact, all the workers were organized and. I mean, talked to about this coming election that DiGiorgio didn't hire. Nobody, not even guys that used to work for him for 6 years.
I know.
He took in, he started recruiting high school kids to work, and he wouldn't give jobs to the old guys who were working there, and then we made a big stink, remember?
Yeah, I know.
About it, and
yeah,
they just robbed us out of it.
Yeah, that election was supposed to be in October of 67,
mm-hmm.
And you called it off a long time before that.
Yeah, because of the fact that they didn't hire the people back. They got the coach, we got pulled because we had kids that were on our side, from high school kids, and had them working with me. And I even had some of them organized, but we wouldn't risk it. They wanted, they said that we could win it, but I didn't try it.
But before you went up there, you went to Gallo and got that started, didn't you?
No, I was in Marysville at that. When Caesar called me up one day and said,
and had you come back down there?
Said, go to Gallo immediately because the Teamsters are over there.
Yeah.
I said, well, who's going to go help me? He said, well, I'll send 10 guys from here to go help you.
Yeah.
So he sent 10 migrant ministry guys.
Yeah.
And when I got down there, they had funny things they wanted to do. And so I sent them all back to the Delano myself, stay by myself.
Yeah.
And
that's when you called me.
Yeah, and then I went down there, and then I started fooling around with, I started tricking them, you know. I went into this bar, you know, that I had this, when the march, and I told them I was in trouble, and I was by myself, and there was a Teamsters, and they had picket lines, and I said, could you help me? He says, what do you want? I said, I want you to fake a meeting for the Teamsters here tonight, and I want to get in the camps. And he said, okay. And I said, I'm sure that they'll spend a lot of money here. So all we have to do is I can get you about 10 guys that I know your members. And he said, you get all the, you know, people you know and tell them that you wanna, that there's some guys who wanna have a meeting with farm workers here. And he did, and we got a meeting, fake meeting there. And the teachers went for it, and they were all there, big shot thing, you know, buying beer and buying food. And you know, that guy from Marysville, Botteo and I, went into the camps, knocking on the doors and talking to him about the Teamsters and this. And then the next day, I went and started, I started picketing. See, they had winos picketing. They didn't have an old guy. They knew anything. So I went to the line and I said, what's this? Who's this picketing? Who's it? Well, this is a Chavez organization. See, big Teamsters thing. So I said, I knew they didn't know what they were doing, so one day I got up, and they were picketing the Gallo winery over there, so I said, all right, let's go, come on. And the guys start running, you know, and they got in the car, so I says, where you want to go, Stockton? He says, yeah, they got to stop. So I said, where are the other boys? He says, they're over there. He says, come on, let's go, and I took about seven guys and took them to Stockton. So the next morning they had a hassle with it because they didn't want to pay them. They told them they left the job, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And the guys were fighting, so they started talking about against them that they wouldn't pay them and all that.
Yeah, yeah.
But then we had them, you know.
Yeah.
Because they weren't organized, and they just had them winers picketing or whatever. They didn't have no people picketing from the branch.
Let's go way back. What do you remember about Caesar when you first got to know, you know, when you first went to Lilo?
Oh, in 9th.
Well, that was in Yuma, huh?
Yeah, it was a long time ago. I must have been about 13 years old. 13 years old.
Did you?
It was 1940.
Is that
1941, we...
Did you live before your mother died? Did you live there in Yuma too?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. In fact, when my mother was still living, I used to go stay over there with him a week or so.
Oh.
The ranch, you know, pick cotton over there. And
on that ranch or in the neighborhood around there?
No.
Right there.
My uncle, he used to have this little cotton
patch.
Yeah. I used to go pick cotton over there. And 1940, my mother died. 1941,
we came to California with them, father and I, and we got to Brawley. And we lived there in Brawley with, you know, this guy that got the Mexico Lindo?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's married to Manuela, one of our relatives, second cousin or something. So we came there and I was working for him at that time, driving truck.
Brawley,
yeah. And then we used to go out there, the melons and carrots and lettuce. And then we used to migrate to Oxnard and then to Santa Barbara to grape, and then to
where'd you work in Santa Barbara?
Santa Barbara? That picture you saw?
Yeah.
At camp, right before you get into...
Yeah, but what did you work in there?
Tomatoes.
Oh.
There were a lot of, you know, all them hills where there's those beautiful houses?
Yeah.
There's tomatoes there, all kinds of tomatoes. No houses. Just before you get to Summerlin.
Yeah.
That's where that picture, that camp there. We used to have a tent there, and tents. And, hell, there was all 100, 200 tents there, people.
They looked like old army tents.
Yeah, that's what they were.
Oh,
yeah? Yeah. Army tents.
Well, what did you work in Oxnard?
On the planting chili or the... We used to go to Moore Park to the apricot.
Yeah.
And vegetables, you know.
Yeah.
And then we migrated to Delano and to Selma and to Biola, the grape.
Yeah.
And Caesar and I used to get up 2-3 o'clock in the morning to turn raisin, and Richard used to carry a lamp for us in front.
Yeah.
We were turning by the penny a tray, you know.
Yeah.
You know, that's like that, you know, the raisin's right there. And then you get another piece of paper like this. And you put it in the back like that, and then you turn this, and you put the paper like this, and then you just turn it like that, and then you use this paper for the next one.
Oh, I see.
And Richard was with a lamp, and then, because it was very hot, and we used to quit around 9 o'clock in the morning, then we'd go back in the afternoon and do some more work. It was a tough job. We wouldn't get up until we get to the other end. And then from there we went to Sacramento. The tomatoes, pick tomatoes, and and then back to Brawley, Imperial Valley. It was just back and forth.
Yeah, this was mainly in the summertime.
Yeah, summertime, and then winter they used to go to school. I wasn't going to school though. Caesar used to go to school. Richard
Dalgo. Was there anything about him at that time that would have given you the idea that he would be what he is today?
Yeah.
What?
Well, the idea that I got from him is, see, one time we were working in San Jose, I don't know if you remember, it was 1941, I think. I was around 16 years old, he must have been about 15. And we were working in the Broccoli with the Arago brothers. And the Broccoli, you know, at that time, they didn't give you nothing to work. It used to be wet. So, as soon as you get in the field, you know Broccoli, how tall it is, and big leaves, and in the winter time, all the dew. So you get in there and you get wet right to your waist. Mm-hmm. And then you have the big canasta in your back with a strap. You get the broccoli, you put it there, and then you go dump it, you know.
Yeah.
So you're wet all over. And 35 cents an hour. And I, one time, said, yeah, this wasn't... I told you, Jesus Christ, there must be some kind of way to make money better than this, you know. Just... This is awful, you know. And what we was making, what, $4, if I remember right, $4.50 or $4.80 for the 10 hours. Am I right? Let me see, 5 times 40, $4.50, 45 cents, and 40 cents an hour.
Yeah.
Right? 10 hours worth. So, He said, well, one of these days we'll do something for the farm worker. And then all the time, he used to, when we used to play, you know, when he was a kid, he used to want to be the general type.
He used to be what?
He wanted to be the general, he wanted to be the leader all the time, right? Right.
Yeah.
You know, play the part. But no, I mean, I don't think we, I never knew that this was going to happen.
No, I didn't mean that, but I just wondered if he, if there was, you know, something about him that, well.
There's a lot of things that I don't remember that, that's why we should have gotten together, you know, remember each other about things.
Yeah.
It's hard, I guess. Maybe there's things that, while I'm talking, he's remembering of other things that happened in that incident.
Yeah, because I haven't talked to him about the early days at all.
You know, we've got a good memory, but Richard. Oh, that's have you talked to him?
Well, I just started to, but then he had to leave.
Yeah, he's got a good memory.
Yeah.
Way back.
And he said that Gonzalo would probably remember a lot, too.
Yeah. We used to work in the canning works. But,
do you ever make, do you ever remember making plans to do various things? And
like organizing?
Well, yeah, not, you know, not organizing farm workers or anything like that, but organizing, having a good time or, you know, whatever you.
Oh, well, yeah, I mean, well. No, I didn't know. You know, I knew that something had to be done to something because of the things that we're doing. Like, for instance, what I tell you, when we was coming from Santa Barbara at the time, that, see, we wouldn't fit in the car, so my father and I or somebody, we had to go on the bus, and, you know, because we wouldn't fit. So we was, and it was in the wartime, you know, you couldn't get a bus. It's packed, and if you did get one, had to wait 4 or 5 hours someplace. So we went downtown and wanted to come back. They bagged me, you know, and tell the police. I said, I'm getting out of town. You know, but they all get in there and kick me in, you know. Next day, they give me 24 hours to get out of town. Then I try to explain to the judge. He says, guilty or not guilty. So in other words, you know, they line you up, you know, and you see that they're giving them 24 hours to get out of town. You plead guilty. If you don't plead guilty, they'll set your sentence for or set your court for 5 days, why in the hell are you going to get out?
Yeah, yeah.
So things like those, you know, and really, but we didn't know how to, you know.
Yeah. Where were you when Caesar, well, were you in the Navy too?
Yeah.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
But not with him.
No, I was, went first.
Yeah.
I went first. Mm-hmm. I went in when I was around 17 years old. No, I was going to be 18 when I went.
Well, did you live here at the same time he did after you came back from
Navy?
The service? Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah, we were living in San Jose when he came back. Richard and I were working, when he was in the service, Richard and I were working in Santa Clara and the ranch over there. One of my folks over there, all of us were there.
Well, when was it that Caesar lived here before, you know, before he went up to San Jose? Isn't this where he got married to Helen? In Delano?
Yeah, after he came out of the service.
Yeah.
But not before he went to the service.
No, after he came out.
Yeah.
Then he came back and lived here.
Right. From then we were in San Jose and then we came back to.
Oh, I see.
At that time, let me see. It was in 1940. When the hell did he get out? 48?
No, that'd be too late. Probably about 45. Because the war was over by then.
The war was over in 46?
46, yeah.
Then he came back here, I guess. See, what happened is that I was only 18, 19, and I used to split. You know, go on my phone, vagueando, you know. And then I used to meet him again.
Yeah.
So they might have come back. I don't know.
Yeah. You weren't here when they had that incident over at the Mexican theater. when you know, when they were segregated, you know, when they...
Oh yeah, they used to segregate you here, sure.
Yeah. Well, were you here. Were you here when he challenged that? He and... I don't know who else was.
No, I don't think so. There was a lot of challenges. We were challenging every day, but on our own way.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, this was an organized thing, and he went to the, law, and the editor of the paper, and all that.
No, I
think it was after, soon after we got back from the service.
Yeah, we used to, you know, cops were here were very bad at that time. You know who was the cop here, Mexican cop, you know, Johnny's Bar, on Main Street over there?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
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 I go over there and once in a while and tell him, did you remember how I used to be? So.
Did he used to be a cop?
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Sure. And, do you want another cup of coffee?
No, I'll have a glass of water or something.
All I have to do is put the heat.
Well, I've drank too much coffee.
Maybe next time,